Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, December 2nd, welcome on into the program, friends. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Studio 2 on Tuesday, yes. December 2nd. Mm-hmm. I like it. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarian.
Has a ring to it,
doesn't it? It does indeed. I want to draw our attention as we start the show to a new product released by Nestle a year ago called Vital Pursuit. It's a line of frozen meals targeted at people taking GLP-1s.
What?
Like Ozempic, Zepbound, etc. Now, that's just the tip of the icebox. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the changes that are coming because of the mass adoption of GLP-1s. GLP-1s don't just cause people to lose weight, Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
They change what you desire.
Yeah.
What you want to
eat. Your cravings, yeah.
Your cravings, what you want to wear. And millions of people's desires are being changed all at once. So how does that impact our economy?
Mm-hmm.
How does that impact our relationships with one another?
Yeah.
Today on the show, we're talking about the ripple effects of GLP-1s, and we want to hear from you. Have your habits changed since you started taking weight loss drugs? What do you think will happen to our society now that weight loss drugs are becoming more and more popular?
Mm-hmm.
Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, hello. Drop a comment in the chat.
And by the way, a lot of people, you probably heard in our billboard, 12% of the population is on some type of weight loss drug. And this is...
And it's only going up.
And it's only going up, 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 because GLP-1s are being used for a lot of different reasons. And so, yeah, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2 at whyy.org. I look forward to hearing from you. And now we have our trio of news stories. First story, construction has begun on a new Philipport cruise terminal near the Philadelphia International Airport. This new terminal will be built on a 16-acre site along the Delaware River called Hog Island. It is just off the runways of Philly International Airport, if you didn't know. And the Port of Philadelphia has inked a 7-year deal with Norwegian Cruise Lines, which will run at least 41 cruise ships a year out of that terminal starting in April of next year. So in just a few months,
you'll be able to take a cruise
out of Philly,
which you couldn't do before, right?
I know, that's a pretty big deal. And you may recall a while back, we talked about Norwegian's plans to launch a cruise destinations out of Philadelphia, but they originally said that the terminal would be along the Delaware River waterfront in South Philly. Clearly, this is a big change. But Hog Island, which is right off of I-95, according to the Philadelphia Business Journal, is said to be a better location for passengers trying to get to the cruise ships. By the way, when the cruise departures happen in April, it will be the first time that this has happened since 2011 and the first cruise departures from Hog Island in more than 20 years. Pretty big deal.
We're a cruise city now.
All right. My parents are going to love this.
By the way, Hog Island has a very interesting maritime history. Do you want to hear about it?
Yeah, of course. Go ahead. Tell me, Avi.
Okay, so Hog Island around World War I was the biggest shipyard in the world. They built like a huge, humongous shipyard on Hog Island. Mm-hmm. 35,000 people worked there.
Wow.
The shipyard did not last very long, but the workers there were called Hoggies, and it is said by some that the sandwiches they ate inspired the word hoagie.
Hoagies went to hoagies.
Now, I actually don't think that's the origin of the word hoagies, uh-huh. but it's a popular, at least, urban myth that that's where the word hoagie comes from, Hog Island. So there you go.
So there you go.
So
when you
eat
go
a hoagie
there
on the cruise ship and feel like you are at one with history.
And by the way, if you want to know where they're going to be going, they're going to be going to Bermuda, the Bahamas, the Caribbean, and Canada, all from Philly.
Bermuda, Bahamas, come on, pretty mama. I like it. All right,
I love
story
it.
Number two. New evidence suggests children who receive a smartphone before age 12 are at higher risk for depression, obesity, and poor sleep compared to peers who do not have a smartphone. This comes from a study published this week in the journal Pediatrics and led by Children's Hospital of Philadelphia researcher Rand Barzilay.
Wow.
It draws on a study that followed over 10,000 children. Now, this conclusion is just an association. It's not a causal link.
Mm-hmm.
But they did find that the earlier a child got a smartphone, the higher their risk for obesity and poor sleep. And the average child in this study got a smartphone at age 11. So most of the kids got a smartphone before age 12. And those kids had all of these poor health outcomes.
Wow. Bottom line, age matters when you talk about smartphones.
Yeah.
And I think parents really need to think of the giving of an iPhone or a smartphone as a pretty big deal. And it may make your kid mad. They'll be like, oh, all my friends have them. All my friends have them. But you need to hold the line.
Yeah.
And I think we had someone on the show a while back who talked about you don't just give your kid the car keys without having them do things first, like take some classes, you know, prove that they're mature enough, you know, take a test, get on the road for a while. Maybe there ought to be some, you know, some benchmarks that you put your kids through and make sure you're ready for what it means to monitor them and put those limitations and also protect their sleep, because that's a pretty big deal.
The sleep thing really struck me.
When brains are still forming and kids are still growing.
Absolutely. And so it doesn't have to be a binary. Like maybe you feel like for security reasons or whatever, you have to give them a phone. But one of the recommendations that you're starting to hear is that maybe you limit where they can use the phone, like specifically in the bedroom, because that's where like the sleep disruption can happen, right?
You take it at night. No phones overnight.
So we're all figuring out ways to negotiate where the line should be, exactly when kids should get smartphones, if they should be given them while their brains are still developing. Like this is all very fluid, but there, it's not just yes or no. There can also be kind of rules within that and benchmarks within that. And I think this new research is helping guide parents towards some common sense solutions, hopefully. But this is a really important new study. Pediatrics is a really big journal.
Yeah.
And so this research out of CHOP is starting to lead the conversation in new directions about when exactly those smartphone purchases should be made.
Yeah. Good study there. Third story, a video of vandals throwing what looked like rocks at the home of Eagles offensive coordinator Kevin Petullo early Saturday morning recently went viral. If you're watching on YouTube, you can take a look at that video. But it turns out that the objects that they were throwing, it wasn't rocks, according to Morristown police. The vandals were actually throwing multiple eggs. So basically, his house got egged. Why, you wonder, why would people do this? Well, fans, Eagles fans, were angry at Petullo and blamed him for the Eagles' 24-15 loss to the Chicago Bears on Black Friday. It was a devastating loss for Eagles fans. And the loss happened because the Birds struggled on offense. It was a very rough game. And fans were so disgruntled that someone went online, and according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, they put up a Fire Kevin Petullo website. Had his photo on there and everything. Someone with access to a traffic sign posted the message, "Fire Kevin Petullo," on one of the traffic signs near the link. And so people were mad. They were big mad, okay? Big mad. And Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni, he says Petullo, who is in his first, you know, year in the role with the team, will remain the shot caller on offense. So he's not, you know, he's not disgruntled with him, at least at this point. But fans are mad enough to egg his house.
A little more context. It really wasn't that one game. The offense has struggled all year. But of course, definitely not defending the decision to egg the guy's house, which is
okay,
ridiculous.
You're not defending it?
No. Good
of
Lord,
course
no.
Not. No, of course not.
Get a grip. And by the way, I got to call out the kids of Morristown, New Jersey specifically, because hat tip to a friend of the show, Dan McQuaid. He found an article from 1993 where kids in Morristown, New Jersey, egged the house of Phillies reliever Mitch Williams, who had just let up a home run that lost the Phillies the World Series. Higher stakes in that case. But still, stop egging athletes and coaches' houses, kids of Morristown, New Jersey. Maybe get it together a little bit. Also, I have to call out.
Wow, same town. Y'all, this is a repeat offense right now.
And I'm sure it's a lovely place, Morristown, New Jersey. Just let's lay off the egging a little bit. By the way,
I'm glad it wasn't rocks.
And I have to say, I people will be mad at me for this particular take. I do think younger fans of this generation are a little spoiled. The Eagles have been
because they won two Super Bowls. This is not normal, y'all.
This is not normal. And I want you to call up Grandpa. I want you to call up Pop and Mom and ask them about the Eagles between the years of 1962 and 1978 and what it was like to be a fan then. Because if you're mad,
it hurts
so mad. about an 8-4 team that just won the Super Bowl last year that you're going to go throw eggs at someone's house. You need to have at least a little grounding in history to understand how bad this franchise used to be, guys.
I'm setting it straight.
Learn your history and put down the eggs.
Put them down. And by the way, Philadelphia was recently left out of a Washington Post piece that listed the best sports cities in America, okay? And honestly, I think it's the overzealous nature of our fans, right? This extreme passion, this egging. We want to be on these lists, man. Y'all can't egg houses, okay?
Oh, you're blaming the eggs for being left off the list?
Yeah, because people are mad because we're a little overzealous in our love. Go birds.
I don't know how GLP-1s are affecting people's appetite for eggs. I do know that GLP-1s and appetites are the focus of our conversation coming up on Studio 2. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Throughout medical history, we've seen how small needles can lead to big changes. The latest example is GLP-1s, which are not merely causing people to lose weight. They're triggering changes in human behavior at a massive scale, a scale that could change the clothes we wear, the foods we eat, and the services we use.
Here's how the Harvard Business Review put it in a recent article. Quote, "We may be underestimating what appetite suppression will unleash across the economy. GLP-1s aren't just treating obesity, they're reprogramming desire," end quote. Today on the show, we look at the ripple effects of GLP-1s.
That includes the impact on our romantic lives and relationships, which we'll get to later in the hour. But first, let's dive into the economic implications of these breakthrough drugs. What products will gain or lose popularity? How are companies adjusting? And for all of that, we bring in Jackie Pizer from The Washington Post. Jackie, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And for you at home, on the road, and elsewhere, our listeners, we want to know, have your habits changed since taking weight loss drugs? And what do you think will happen to our society now that weight loss drugs are becoming more popular? We want to hear from you. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. And we want to bring in a caller.
Yeah, let's start with Rebecca from Northern Liberties, who's on line one. Hey, Rebecca, you're on Studio 2. Would love to hear your insights on GLP-1s.
Yes, hi. So I have been taking GLP-1s for a little over a year. I've lost 65 pounds. Wow. I've been battling my weight since I was 13, and I am now 75. And I found over the years that if I was strictly avoided carbs, I could lose weight. But your brain, your hormones, your neurotransmitters don't let you do that forever.
Yeah.
The thing I wanted to say is that I found that it suppressed my appetite to such an extent that I didn't ever want to eat. And I had to force myself to eat, and I know that I was not getting enough protein. So that's one thing I wanted to put out there, is that if you're going to take these drugs, you have to be really prepared to force yourself to eat enough protein. Mm-hmm. I was also wondering whether the product you mentioned from Nestle, which is targeted to people taking GLP-1s, whether it addresses the issue of not getting enough protein.
Yeah. So let's bring in Jackie Pizer, who covers retail for the Washington
Post.
Thanks, Rebecca. That's a great call, I think, to set us up, because it's not just that people necessarily are eating less. There is a refocus on what you should be eating when you are eating. Mm-hmm. And I do think some retailers and some manufacturers are focusing on packing more protein into foods. So maybe, Jackie, you could begin to unpack that for us.
Yeah, I'm glad Rebecca brought that up. It's a good way to kick it off. I mean, protein in general in the zeitgeist is so big right now. Yeah. I mean, you walk through the grocery store and you'll see it everywhere. There's like 20 grams of protein in yogurt. You know, they're seeping it into everything. There's popcorn that has protein.
Waffles. So everything. Yeah.
Who needs Pop-Tarts with protein? But it really feeds into this like broader trend that's growing. And I think that some of it has really come from the the growing popularity of GLP-1 drugs. I mean, it's so crucial to have a good amount of protein because not only does it help with muscle mass, which is one of the side effects of the drugs, it helps satiate you more. It also is good for your metabolism. So it's really emphasized by doctors, and a lot of consumer goods companies are jumping on this and they saw the writing on the wall. And so they've been developing a lot of products that are protein rich.
Yeah. Building off that, can you talk about some other types of food products that may become more popular as GLP-1s ascend? I'm sure we're going to get to the stuff that's maybe at the risk of becoming less popular, but stuff that's maybe there's some growth potential because of the growth of these drugs.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything that supports like muscle mass will be part of that. Antioxidants, anything that really keeps you hydrated, those are all side effects of the drugs. And certainly, I mean, protein is probably the most evident, but anything that really counteracts that is probably what we'll see continue to grow in that space.
Yeah, and we started with food because, you know, you kind of need food to live, and it does change your appetite and what you crave. So I wonder if there's a through line, because you're a reporter, you cover this type of industry, retail, all of that. Was there something that you were seeing that said, you know what, I want to look at the impact of GLP-1s? What were you seeing sort of bubbling to the surface?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just talking to sources. I had one that said to me, you know, she works with a lot of retailers and consumer good companies, and was kind of like felt like she was screaming into the void and being like, you need to get ready for this because this is going to change everything. And she kind of walked me through all the different parts of the consumer economy that are going to feel impact of this. And these drugs are just growing so rapidly in popularity, and they're just going to continue to. So that's what really kind of piqued my interest. And then once I started looking at the data and really seeing, you know, what little nuggets are showing that it's seeping in, and how, and listening to retailers' earnings calls and hearing them talk about it and how they're adapting as well.
Yeah. And we talked about the food that people need. And of course, protein is a big thing. People are trying to fight against that muscle waste that comes when you lose weight so fast. Are there things that are, what are the losers? Because what are folks sort of pushing away from, you know, pushing away at the table?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest impacts of these drugs is eliminating something called food noise. So it's like this constant desire or like distracting in your head of thinking about what's your next meal, wanting a snack when maybe you're not hungry. And a lot of people who struggle with obesity talk about this. And so the drug has been revolutionary for them because they're not distracted by that anymore. That aspect of it has really, you know, changed how people think about what they want to eat. And in turn, you know, maybe they're not, you know, craving those snack foods that were preoccupying them. So we've seen sales of salty snacks go down. And then in turn, you know, sales of vegetables going up, but also alcohol sales have been down, which is a broader trend across the economy right now. But there's evidence that shows that it can reduce your craving for alcohol. So they're one of the losers here, I guess.
And we want to hear from you this hour. Have your habits changed since taking weight loss drugs? What do you think will happen to our society now that weight loss drugs are becoming more popular? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. You mentioned the salty snacks, and companies had gotten so good at hacking into our desire for salty snacks, these ultra-processed foods, which triggered our appetites in so many different ways. And, you know, there's a lot of eggs in that basket for the big food producers in our country. And I just wonder how they're going to adjust or diversify if lots of people don't eat that way anymore. Not that I'm feeling bad for big food. I just wonder from a business standpoint, like, how do you adjust when you have invested so much in the exact type of foods that it seems like GLP-1s allow us to better push aside?
Yeah, I mean, I think that That's a nuanced question because, you know, a lot of folks say, well, they're maybe still eating some of the snacks that they did before, but they're doing it in more moderation, you know. Mm-hmm. So they could still be buying a box of Cheez-Its, but maybe they're not going through it as quickly as they once did. So we're not going to see, like, there's still going to be Lay's chips, like, on the shelf, you know. But I also think it's an interesting timing with inflation of food products in general and, like, the deflation in the size of bags. It's almost kind of like this kismet, like, lining up in a sense, because prices are still staying the same, but maybe the bags are smaller. So maybe that, like, works out in a weird way.
Yeah, it sort of balances itself out. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, on the other hand of it, it's like these companies are you know, adapting and developing. And one thing that some of these, you know, insiders in the industry have told me is that there's going to be a lot more of, like, mergers and acquisitions. A lot of these big companies are just going to be acquiring up these companies that are catering towards folks who are on the drugs. So, say, have a really, you know, a good line of protein rich products, et cetera. And we've already started to see that.
I wonder if this is a good sort of comparison point, but I remember when, you know, there's obviously been some decline in soda consumption, growing acknowledgement about how bad soda is for you. And so all these sparkling water brands really took off. And then the big soda producers started gobbling up the sparkling water brands to diversify their own portfolios. Are you suggesting something similar in the snacking world?
I would not be surprised if that continues to ramp up. And I can't name any on the top of my head, but I've talked to some folks who work in this space, especially in venture capital, who, you know, help fund companies that are starting, you know, developing consumer goods like this. And they've said that there are a lot more that are entering the space, and they're expecting more acquisitions to happen over the next couple of years.
Mm. Wow. Shawnee on Facebook writes, they have helped me, talking about GLP-1s, have helped me gain more self-control and self-respect. I lost 50 pounds 2 years ago and kept it off. By the way, have your habits changed since taking weight loss drugs? What do you think will happen to our society now that weight loss drugs are becoming more popular? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, keep those comments coming on the chat. And by the way, Jackie, I wanted to ask you about, you know, staying on the food topic. I want to talk about restaurants because, you know, a lot of times folks go to, and then we had gotten to a place in this country where your portion sizes were huge. You go to a place and you're like, oh my goodness. And when folks are on GLP-1, just the sight of that much food makes them not want to go there, right? And so do you see any ripple effects on how, you know, restaurants, what they serve as far as what's on the menu, portion sizes, and sort of adjusting to this GLP-1 population?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's still a little bit early to really tell, but there are, like, some anecdotes that we've heard from restaurants that say maybe are offering like snack-sized food products or options on their menu. And then also, like, I've listened into some earnings calls from some of the, like, bigger pizza chains or fast food chains, and they haven't really talked about it in the last several quarters, but, you know, about a year ago, some were talking about experimenting with maybe a smaller pizza size or offering more salad or healthy options. And I mean, they're already, you know, at least with the quick service restaurants, there's a general decline across the economy of people going to them. But specifically for this cohort, also, there's been declines of visits, like, around breakfast and dinner time. So because of that lessening of the food noise, they're maybe not feeling that urge to buy. Also, like, greasy foods can really upset your stomach if you're on the drugs. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, as this continues to grow, how much these quick service restaurants really adapt. I mean, some have GLP-1 friendly menus already. So it could be interesting to see if more adopt that.
Yeah. And I think about, you know, places that are fast food restaurants. And if you eat all that greasy food, your stomach is going to be really upset. And so you got to have some different offerings for folks, or they're going to go elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's also interesting, like, we've seen Starbucks has protein drinks. Now, that we can't say that's directly in response to this, but it's definitely in response to the larger trend we've seen. I mean, Smoothie King has a GLP-1 menu. So we're seeing it, like, grow in a smaller pace. I bet a lot of companies are kind of waiting to see where this all shakes out and how much they need to actually change their menu to really keep customers coming.
Interesting.
Speaking of side effects, I want to read this comment from Jill TK987 on YouTube, who says, I started on one brand a month ago and just switched to another, talking about GLP-1s. I did better on the first one. This new one, my Lord, I've never been more sick. No wonder people lose weight. Can't keep anything down. I'm actually concerned about my teeth at this point, how much stomach acid will destroy them and my digestion tract. Yes, I'm reaching out to my doctor.
Wow.
These medications have side effects, in some cases quite serious side effects. And so it sounds like from reading your reporting, Jackie, there is now a kind of small cottage industry, boom industry, trying to address the side effects of the medication. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to hear this from your listener. I think one thing that Rebecca said, the other listener, was, you know, really making sure you get enough protein intake. So hopefully that can help. But as for the cottage industry, I mean, gyms are a really good example of that, right? So when you are taking the drugs, like I said earlier, it can impact your muscle mass. So there's a lot of emphasis on strength training and exercising. And so gyms have really jumped on this, and they are offering like GLP-1, you know, training guides. They have trainers that they'll work with, that you can work with to help you. They have like protocol that they offer. And then some are also opening clinics. So, you know, where there are ostensibly medical professionals who can help you. But also it could make it easier for people to actually get the drug, because it'll literally be in your gym. You can probably get a prescription.
Christina on Facebook says, I lost 65 pounds this past year on GLP-1s. My blood pressure meds were lowered and my A1C looks like I don't have diabetes. We cut those meds in half. I'm able to do more, move better. And I would say people seem a little nicer and more complimentary. And so one of the things I learned from your reporting is that people are even traveling differently now, because like she said, Christina said, look, I could do more. I'm more physically active. Like, it just changes your whole focus. How has it impacted the travel industry?
Yeah, that's one of the things that a source told me early on, was that, you know, these drugs radically change how people feel, not just physically, but also mentally, emotionally. And people gain confidence. So not only are they feeling better in their bodies, but they're feeling, you know, maybe they have that food noise that's gone and they can focus more on themselves, which it can be quite distracting. So they're possibly more open to travel. I mean, still, we don't necessarily know how it's all going to play out, but a lot of, you know, hotels have been getting ready for this. They have been renovating their gyms. There's also talk of more kind of like wellness travel. So, you know, and that's not talking about like a detox or anything like that. It's more talking about maybe resorts that have more tailored, like active things you can do, like hiking or water sports or things like that. So it kind of like reinvigorates your desire to be adventurous, is what we've been hearing anecdotally.
As we get ready to wind down this segment, I want to bring in one more caller. This is Justin from Spring Garden on line one. Hey, Justin, you're on Studio 2. What do you want to add to this conversation about GLP-1s and their ripple effects on society?
Hi. So basically, you know, my mom works in insurance, and it was originally GLP-1s were developed for diabetics, and we've really seen a rise in the elective use of the drug for people who would, in my opinion, better benefit from a change in lifestyle habits. And so just basically the cost of these drugs are eventually going to have a ripple effect that are going to, you know, skyrocket the price of insurance premiums that will, you know, eventually make it to people that aren't even using the drugs, you know, when only a select few people really, truly need these drugs.
Interesting call there from Justin. And I would just say there's a debate right now about the long-term cost of this. Of course, Justin's bringing up the cost that to insurers, which then gets passed along to everyone else in the insurance pool. But there's also the possibility that this could reduce chronic disease among a lot of people, and that could bring down healthcare costs in the long run. So I think that's something that still needs to play out. But I want to thank Jackie Pizer, who covers retail for The Washington Post, for all of your insights this hour. This is an area that we're going to be watching so closely, just to see how our entire economy changes because of GLP-1s. Jackie, thanks for the time today on Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
And another area that we're going to be talking about is how the use of GLP-1s is affecting relationships. So we want to hear from you. Have your habits changed since taking weight loss drugs? What do you think will happen to our society now that weight loss drugs are becoming more popular? 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2 here at WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Earlier this hour, we talked about the impact GLP-1 drugs are having on our consumer culture and economy. Now we want to shift to look at how these medications are changing people's relationships. With us is Lisa Miller. She's a correspondent for the New York Times Well Desk. And earlier this year, she asked people about how these weight loss drugs were affecting their long-term romantic partnerships. And a lot of people responded. Lisa Miller, welcome to Studio 2.
So happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, and for you, our listeners, our question of the day is, how are weight loss drugs affecting your relationships? You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, put those comments in the chat.
I'll read another comment here from Jesse in East Passyunk, who says, junk and snack foods in this country are chemically engineered to keep us eating, forming addiction-level cravings. The larger question is why we needed a breakthrough like GLP-1s to combat unhealthy food before holding profit-driven food companies to account and forcing them to rethink how their products affect us nationwide. Lucky Jesse, we actually did do a show on that earlier, with an interview with Bernie Sanders in that show, actually. So I'd encourage you to check that one out. But it's a fair point to bring up from Jesse in East Passyunk. Shifting now to what you wrote about, Lisa Miller, the way these drugs are changing people's relationships. I feel like at the core of what you wrote, it is about how change affects relationships, long-term relationships. Mm-hmm. Like there is a sort of bedrock stability that kind of keeps a relationship together on some level. And when you shake the bedrock a little bit, things happen. So what did you find? What was like the standout conclusion of your reporting?
I mean, that's totally right. One of the psychologists I talked to talked about how relationships are really invested in stability. Like, both people will do a lot to keep things the same, right? And that's why upheaval, any kind of upheaval, a new job, a move, a new baby, like the death of a parent, all of these things like shake us in our relationships. But what we hadn't really talked about is what it's like to like change your body dramatically in a relationship, like to go from bigger to smaller. It changes your like erotic situation. It changes your what turns you on. It changes your sense of self. It changes how other people see you. And I guess, Avi, the big takeaway is that the couples who seem to me, and I spoke to a lot of couples, to have succeeded in weathering this change are those who can be flexible. I mean, that's not like rocket science, but like if you're a couple who's really invested in eating a certain way and one of you is on a weight loss drug, that's going to be really hard. If you're a couple who's really invested in going to restaurants or drinking a lot of wine or loves to bake and eat desserts or has family dinners that are like the bedrock of your relationship, that stuff's going to get really, really hard. But if you can like make the lasagna and be okay when your partner eats just a little bit and not feel affronted and not feel hurt, I think, you know, my sense from the couples I spoke to is that, you know, you can be okay.
Yeah, I like that. I want to bring in a caller. We have Joel from Reading on the line. Joel, you're on Studio 2. What do you want to share about how GLP-1s have affected relationships?
I think it's been amazing. I've lost about 95 pounds so far. At first, it was a bit difficult, but then eventually my partner also joined in because it was difficult seeing me eat very little, didn't have much belief in it, and then he just saw the weight just drop. And so he also got on it about 6 months, 7 months. He's also dropped, and I think that we've worked together to kind of navigate what we can eat, what we can't eat, things that we used to eat, and seeing the change that happens in both of us. We both lost weight. We both look different. Managing, I mean, we caught ourselves the other day throwing away clothes that just don't fit anymore. Wow. Managing what that looks like and managing our own self-confidence, but we're working through it with one another. So it really has made us stronger as a couple. I think that it's also changed our outlook in terms of just being more healthy in terms of stability of long-term wise. Like, okay, now we have this, now we're working towards a unique goal together.
Yeah,
so quick, I think it's shaped. Yes.
Quick follow-up to you, Joel. I mean, did you see a difference between the way your relationship sort of worked when only you were doing the GLP-1s versus what happened once your partner joined in?
Totally. I mean, I think... Oh, sorry.
And I was asking Joel. Joel, and then that same question to you, Lisa. Joel, did you see a difference between when your partner was also using GLP-1s versus when it was just you?
I think when I was using it was a bit difficult for him to see just the small portions because, I mean, he's a great cook.
Yeah.
Once he got on it, the bandwagon was trying to use it, it just became easier. Like, you know, we used to cook 2 cups of rice or 3 cups of rice. Now we're down to 1 cup of rice. We figured, we figured out what works for us to eat. Sure, we do have our snacks here and there because that's, it's something that's been part of us, but it's less, right? We think about we can do better for that. I mean, heck, I mean, I'm having overnight oats. I would never have done that before. And so we notice the difference together that we're making more conscientious decisions of the food that we eat.
Thank you
and
so
we're
much.
More collaborative. Yep.
Thank you. That's Joel from Reddick. Great call. And so, Alisa, I mean, clearly there is some what Joel is saying, that there was a big difference between the way their relationship worked when only Joel was on it versus when his partner joined in. Was that something you saw? Because I wonder what happens when only one person in the couple goes on GLP-1s.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, it's definitely something I found in my reporting when couples are doing this or some version of this together. I did talk to one couple who were both taking a GLP-1 in secret. And they were traveling to another city to get their doses of the medication. They hadn't told their child, their adult child. They hadn't told their friends. And they talked about how, like, it was like having some like sexy secret together, and they sort of loved the secret part of it. And really the conflict does come up when one person is on the drug and the other person isn't. When you're living in a bigger body, you experience a lot of shame from the world and a lot of judgment. And there's this like implicit idea, right? That if you just ate better and exercised, you could lose weight. One couple that I really spent a lot of time with, this was like their essential conflict, was that she, who was on the drug, felt like her husband was judging her. Mm-hmm. Like, why don't you just work out? Why don't you just, like, he wasn't saying those things. He was a nice guy and a loving husband, but she felt like the judgment that she felt from the world was coming from him too. And it made her really angry. And like they had a really hard time resolving that.
Mm. Wow. I think you're talking about, is that Jean and Javier from your reporting?
That was a great story.
The other thing that stuck out to me about their relationship is that Javier, the husband who's not on the drugs, he had, a real affection for his wife's, I guess, former body, you would say.
He liked it a lot.
He liked her size. She obviously wanted to lose weight for many reasons, including just regular health reasons. I think she had some liver complications. But he, like, I guess, hadn't prepared for the prospect of losing that version of his wife. And it made me think that maybe some pre-counseling almost would have been helpful in that case to be like, all right, this is what's going to happen. Maybe, like, You need to make some peace with that and learn a new way of connecting romantically. Were there other anecdotes like that?
Totally. I mean, I talked to this one guy who was a thin person. He has always been a thin person, but he had an erotic preference for women in bigger bodies.
Yeah.
And he met his wife on a dating site for people in bigger bodies. Mm. And like, she turned him on. And they were also married and they had kids and they were, you know, it wasn't a fetish, it was a preference. And they had a long, stable history together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she started taking the drug and he had a lot of anxiety about this. Like, what if her body isn't what I like anymore? And she, according to him, really resisted that. She was just like, this is my choice. This is my decision.
Mm-hmm.
We like, this isn't about your sex, like your erotic preference. This is about what I want to do with my body. And he was like, of course, I respect that. At the same time, I have these feelings.
I like your body. Yeah.
It's so hard to sublimate that, to put that aside, because it's so baked into how you connected originally.
Yes. So interesting. And what you said, Avi, about like pre-counseling, I mean, you know, I think all of the couples I spoke to at length were really bowled over by, like, surprised, astonished by the way that their self-perception changed and how that changed all of their relationships, including their marriage. And I think that, like, doctors will tell you about the side effects and they'll tell you about the cost and they'll, you know, tell you what to eat and how to exercise. But to say, like, you're going to want to have a conversation with your partner.
And not just a conversation in passing, which Jean and Javier seem to have. Like, I'm going on this drug. They didn't go deep. Before she ventured down that lane. Another thing I wanted to ask you about with regard to that relationship and then expand out to what you talked about was sort of the sex life. Because one of the offshoots of this, some people have seen increases in libido. Other people have seen decreases in libido. What's the general, like, you know, sentiment out there with regard to, like, does it make your sex life better? Does it make you crave sex less?
Studies are inconclusive.
Yeah.
It seems very all over the place right now.
But one of the things Jean said is she was a more compliant person. So she would have, as a larger person, she was more willing to have sex just because she was a pleaser. But then when she lost the weight, she didn't want to do it anymore. She was like, I'm not pleasing. I'm just going to not do what I don't want to do.
It was so interesting to me. That part of the dynamic was so interesting to me. You know, she felt apologetic for herself in a bigger body. She felt like she always had to kind of do what people wanted her to do, including having sex with her husband, whom she loved and whom she wanted to have sex with most of the time, right? Like, it wasn't like she was making a big sacrifice, but she had this pleaser impulse, as you said, Cherry. And when she became smaller and she received the approval of the world, like her bosses, her friends, like people on the street, like were responding to her totally differently. She tells this story about being on an airplane as she was in her smaller body and some guy saying to her, oh, I'm so glad I'm not sitting next to a big person. Mm. And she thought, like, every time I've been on an airplane, has the person sitting next to me thought that?
Wow.
Made her so angry and so self-protective of her old self that I think that the drugs, I'm like talking in circles, but like, I think the drugs gave her permission to say no to a lot of things.
Yeah.
And one of those things was sex with her husband. And when I met them last, whenever it was, winter, they hadn't had sex in like 8 months. And he was being very, very patient. And like, okay, I love you. I want this. I'm clear that I want this. We're going to try to work it out. I'll be patient. I don't love it. And she was like, I got to work it out. I got to take my own time. This is a whole new body. There's a whole new thing for me.
Yeah, that must have been hard for them. Yeah.
Keep your calls and comments coming this hour. We're asking you, how are weight loss drugs affecting your relationships, your sense of self? We also asked earlier how you think the mass adoption of GLP-1s will impact or ripple through society. So you can keep offering comments and calls on that. 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. One thing that occurred to me reading your reporting and other reporting, Lisa, is just about how these drugs impact our relationships with things that used to bring us a lot of pleasure. Not just talking about sex, but like food for a lot of people, like sparks joy. Right. Going out to dinner really sparks joy. And that how does your relationship to your partner, but everyone in your family change when the things that used to be like your things are kind of like meh now? What did you uncover talking to people about that?
I mean, this is where it goes to expectations, right? Yeah. We are the people who love restaurants.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's our thing.
We are the couple that loves restaurants. We always go to the new restaurant. We love to dine out. We like expensive food, whatever it is. One woman said to me, like, I love how I feel in my body. I feel so hot in my new body. But my husband takes me out to a restaurant and I'm just sitting there picking at the bread. And he's like, you are not fun to take to a restaurant anymore.
Yeah.
And she can't argue with that. She's not fun to take to a restaurant anymore. And it requires like a lot of adapting. Like, should we go for a walk? Should we go for a movie? To a movie? Should we go to the gym together? But like fundamentally, they're restaurant people. So what do they do? It's can be a real dilemma. One couple I talked to was like, they were older and they love to go to Trader Joe's on weekend mornings.
I totally get that, by the way. Yeah, Trader Joe's is great, especially if the crowds are a little thin.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the man who was the one who was on the GLP-1 would wake up every morning and be like, every week, Saturday morning, and be like, when are we going to Trader Joe's? And then suddenly he was just like, didn't feel like going to Trader Joe's anymore.
Yeah.
It's like just a thing they did. We're the ones who go to Trader Joe's on the weekends. It's so fascinating to explore the unwritten rules of a relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, like we all have unwritten rules.
Like you didn't necessarily think that was like a linchpin of your relationship. But then when it goes away, you're like, wait a second. Like that was a big part of our couple's identity or our family identity. It doesn't have to be a romantic partner. Yeah. I just think you're navigating a loss in some way.
And I was thinking about the wine thing. People have wine cellars, you know, they collected bottles of wine. They enjoyed a couple of drinks at the end of the week. And then that's not a thing you do anymore because the GLP-1s make you not crave wine. I wonder, you know, I know you talked a lot about relationships, but I wonder, did it make some relationships better at all? Like, did you see people say, oh, you know, my husband's, you know, confidence went up, or my wife was, she thought she was sexy, bought a whole new, you know, wardrobe, and it improved things.
I met this couple, excuse me, online, on the phone. And they were this very, like, lovely middle-aged couple from the Midwest. And she had gained a ton of weight after pregnancy and then had not lost it and then went through menopause and just, like, had a bunch of extra pounds that were making her feel awful. And he was kind of like normal guy. Normal, not fashion-y, not fabulous guy. Worked out, loved his wife. And she started walking down the street. She started taking the medication, feeling like $1 billion. And she was like, you know, in the cafe, I'm getting looks from the, you know, barista, and people are holding the door for me in a new way. And she bought new clothes. And I think she got like a piercing. Like she started feeling like youthful and hot. Mm-hmm. And he just loved his wife. And he was like, I'm never going to do this for myself. Like, I'm never going to take these drugs. I'll work out maybe sometimes. But I love that she's feeling so hot. And I can see how happy it's making her. And like, I think together they were excited by the change in her body. So yeah, I do think that it can really be great, you know,
for some people. Yeah.
Now the flip side of it, you talked to, I think, a lawyer in Washington State who lost weight and then kind of realized like her husband had been, or felt her husband had been taking her for granted. When she lost the weight, it felt like she she felt somewhat liberated from the relationship, and I think they ended up divorcing, right? Do I have that?
Yeah,
that story
I
right?
mean, that's right. The example was like she discovered that he liked her big because it made him feel like she was never going to leave him. Like, if I have somebody who is not attractive to the rest of the world, then I have control in a way that, you know, if she's getting looks from other people at the gym or at work or whatever, you know, that's a different story. And she realized that, like, she didn't need that. Yeah, and she left him.
Wow. So it sounds like to me the lesson here, is there a lesson from all of this? If you have a partner who is considering, you know, GLP-1s, if you as a couple may be considering that, is there a lesson here?
I mean, I guess like have a conversation.
Yeah.
A real
one. Have a real conversation. Like what, how are you going to feel when my body is really different? I may not want to do the same things. Do we have thoughts about what we could do instead? You know, be patient with me. I'll be patient with you. I mean, I really admired Gene and Javier for their patience with each other.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, it was hard. They were having a hard time when I met them and they were fighting a lot, but they were very patient with each other and that showed a lot of love.
Yeah. But patience, that applies in lots of relationship scenarios. So thank you, Lisa Miller, for your insight and your patience this hour. Lisa Miller is correspondent for the New York Times Well Desk. Thank you again, Lisa, for joining us on Studio 2.
Bye.
Yes, and thank you to all our callers today and those who wrote in. And thank you, of course, to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryant. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Callagay, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk to you tomorrow.